Interlude. The Schoolmaster of Roses.
No, this is my heart. Strike! Strike! Now here, strike!
Cold grey water poured down on the House of Glass Roses. Camorre's winter rain pooled an inch deep beneath the feet of Jean Tannen and Don Maranzala. Water ran in rivulets and threads down the face of every rose in the garden. It ran in small rivers into Jean Tannen's eyes as he struck out with his rapier again and again at the stuffed leather target the Don held on the end of a stick, little larger than a big man's fist.
Strike here! And here! No, too low! That's the liver! Kill me now, not a minute from now! I might have another thrust left in me! Up! Up at the heart, under the ribs! Better!
Grey-white light exploded within the swirling clouds overhead, rippling like fire glimpsed through smoke. The thunder came a moment later, booming and reverberating, the sound of the gods throwing a tantrum. Jean could barely imagine what it must be like atop the five towers, now just a series of hazy grey columns lost in the sky behind Don Maranzala's right shoulder.
Enough, Jean, enough. You're passing fair with a pig sticker. I want you to be familiar with it at need, but it's time to see what else you have a flair for.
Don Maranzala, who was wrapped up inside a much-abused brown oil cloak, splashed through the water to a large wooden box.
You won't be able to haul a long blade around in your circles. Fetch me the woundman.
Jean hurried through the twisting glass maze toward the small room that led back down into the tower. He respected the roses still. Only a fool would not, but he was quite used to their presence now. They no longer seemed to loom and flash at him like hungry things. They were just an obstacle to keep one's fingers away from. The wound man, stashed in the little dry room at the top of the staircase, was a padded leather dummy in the shape of a man's head, torso, and arms, standing upon an iron pole. Bearing this awkwardly over his right shoulder, Jean stepped back out in the driving rain and returned to the center of the garden without fragrance. The wound man scraped the glass walls several times, but the roses had no taste for empty leather flesh. Don Maranzala had opened the wooden chest and was rummaging around in it. Jean set the wound man up in the center of the courtyard. The metal rod slid into a hole bored down through the stone and locked there with a twist, briefly pushing up a little fountain of water.
"Here's something ugly," said the Don,
swinging a 4-foot length of chain wrapped in very fine leather, likely kid.
"It's called a bailiff's lash, wrapped up so it doesn't rattle. If you look close, it's got little hooks at either end, so you can hitch it around your waist like a belt. Easy to conceal under heavier clothes, though you might eventually need one a bit longer to fit around yourself."
The Don stepped forward confidently and let one end of the padded chain whip toward the woundman's head. It rebounded off the leather with a loud, wet whack. Jean amused himself for a few minutes by laying into the woundman, while Don Maranzala watched. Mumbling to himself, the Don then took the padded chain away and offered Jean a pair of matched blades. They were about a foot long, one-sided, with broad and curving cutting edges. The hilts were attached to heavy handguards, which were studded with small brass spikes.
"Nasty little bitches, these things. Generally known as thieves' teeth. No subtlety to them. You can stab, hack, or just plain punch. Those little brass nubs can scrape a man's face off, and those guards'll stop most anything short of a charging bull. Have at it!"
Jean's showing with the blades was even better than his outing with the lash. Maranzala clapped approvingly.
"That's right! Up through the stomach, under the ribs. Put a foot of steel there and tickle a man's heart with it, and you've just won the argument, son."
As he took the matched blades back from Jean, he chuckled.
"How's that for teeth lessons, eh, boy? Eh?"
Jean stared at him, puzzled.
"Haven't you ever heard that one before? Your Kappa Barsavi, he's not from Camorre originally. Taught at the Therin Collegium. So when he drags someone in for a talking to, that's etiquette lessons. And when he ties them up and makes them talk, that's singing lessons. And when he cuts their throats and throws them in the bay for the sharks...
Oh, said Jean, I guess that'd be teeth lessons. I get it.
Right. I didn't make that one up, mind you. That's your kind. I'd lay odds the big man knows about it, but nobody says anything like that to his face. That's how it always is, be it cutthroats or soldiers. So, next lovely toy.
Maranzala handed Jean a pair of wooden-handled hatchets. These had curved metal blades on one side and round counterweights on the other.
No fancy name for these skullcrackers. I wager you've seen a hatchet before. Your choice to use the blade or the ball. It's possible to avoid killing a man with the ball, but if you hit hard enough, it's just as bad as the blade. So judge carefully when you're not attacking a woundman.
Almost immediately, Jean realized that he liked the feel of the hatchets in his hands. They were long enough to be more than a pocket weapon, like the gimp steel or the blackjacks most right people carried as a matter of habit, yet they were small enough to move swiftly and use in tight spaces, and it seemed to him they could hide themselves rather neatly under a coat or vest. He crouched. The knife fighter's crouch seemed natural with these things in his hands. Springing forward, he chopped at the wound man from both sides at once, embedding the hatchet blades in the dummy's ribs. With an overhand slash to the wound man's right arm, he made the whole thing shudder. He followed that cut with a backhanded stroke against the head, using a ball rather than a blade. For several minutes, he chopped and slashed at the wound man, his arms pistoning, a smile growing on his face.
Not bad, said Don Maranzala. Not bad at all for a total novice, I'll grant you that. You seem very comfortable with them.
On a whim, Jean turned and ran to one side of the courtyard, putting 15 feet between himself and the wound man. The driving rain thrust fingers of grey down between him and the target, so he concentrated very hard, and then he lined up and threw, whipping one hatchet through the air with the full twisting force of his arm, hips, and upper body. The hatchet sank home, blade flat on, in the wound man's head, where it held fast in the layers of leather without so much as a quiver.
Oh, my, said Don Maranzala.
Lightning roiled the heavens yet again, and thunder echoed across the rooftop.
My, yes. Now there's a foundation we can build upon.